And here is a deal of the day, a bit of information for you. Getting into a cold car is no fun, so scraping ice off your windows with a keyless car starter from B&R Automotive Accessories. It's a great thing to have, man. Once you got one, you'll never want to be without it again. Right now, get a $349 starter for just $249, only for My Buffalo Perks. Details at MyBuffaloPerks.com. And I'm thinking, if you have any holiday, you know, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or somebody's special day like a birthday or an anniversary, a car starter in Western New York is just worth its weight in gold. Either of you guys have a car starter? Does your car start without you getting in there and turning it? Your car doesn't start at all.
Some days it does.
So you don't have a starter.
No.
How about you, Beamer?
No, I just get up 20 minutes earlier, go start it, and hop back in bed.
Well, that's smart. That's exactly right. And I think that would apply to things besides car starters. But anyway, that's another story. So congratulations on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. You will be doing this show, and you've invited the Entercom All-Stars to join you. All names people know. All people who work together with us, even though we compete on the air, we don't compete in the building.
Exactly. Just be a fun discussion, a fun show. Obviously, your call is welcome, too. We're going to get you through Black Friday, that post-Thanksgiving little funk and all that fun shopping.
I would call you on my show. I don't even call me on my show. So why would I call you and use up a fabulous bit or a great joke and not have it for the future?
Well, your name is still on the show.
Yeah,
it's Joe Beamer in for Sandy Beach.
What do you think, Tony? Should I call in and enlighten the young man?
Sure.
Just take over the show.
I think you both should. We definitely want to hear about Tony's cooking on Thanksgiving. And I'm always interested to hear what he's going to do with his leftovers, because Tony likes to create a lot with his food.
Are you going to, one year, didn't you cook the turkey in like a pressure cooker or
something? Deep fryer.
How did that work out?
That was the best turkey I have ever had.
Yeah. Now you have an air fryer, don't you?
Yeah, I wish I had one big enough for a turkey.
Oh, it's too small for a turkey.
Oh, yeah, way too small.
If you had a bigger fryer, nothing personal.
Right.
But if you had a bigger fryer, because, you know, big fryers mean something.
They sure do.
They matter. They really do matter. Could you do a turkey in it?
I would imagine so.
I love turkey.
Deep-fried turkey is the best because you get the skin is kind of crunchy and then moist meat underneath. It's fabulous.
See,
that's the best part.
I like white meat, which is dry, usually. Dark meat is more moisture. White meat's dry. But the good part about having it is not everybody wants it. So it's easier for you to get seconds and thirds and fourths and fifths
mm-hmm.
than the people who just want the dark meat. How about you, Beamer? Dark meat, white meat? What do you?
Oh, I like any part of the bird. Like, I am a huge fan.
The bird.
Now you know why I'm not going to call it.
Come on.
Let's talk about
surfing bird. Bird is the word.
I love Thanksgiving because I do love turkey. I love almost anything that goes around the turkey. And then the days after, the things you can do. Turkey sandwiches.
That's the best.
Yes, exactly.
The best. Turkey sandwiches, the best. I like cranberry sauce, too.
The best part of Thanksgiving is stuffing.
That's stuffing favorite. You know who makes great stuffing?
Oh,
Bernadette.
Ooh. Well, she makes some to go.
That woman named Bernadette makes fabulous stuffing.
I have to say, and Tony is right. It's a mess, but the best turkey is a deep-fried turkey.
And we've got to do an intervention with Mazurowski. This morning, there was a big question about whether Hawaiian pizza was any good or not. There's some head of a foreign country actually wanted to ban it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now, I don't think you should have it every time, certainly, but every once in a while, Hawaiian pizza is good. Maz has never had it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I like it. Do you like it?
Oh, Hawaiian pizza is probably my most favorite. I like just the basic with the sauce, cheese, the pineapples, the ham, the cherries, and a little bit of almond on top. I know, Sandy, you can't have the almond on
top. No, I can't have the almond on
top. I've never had almonds on it, but like the pizza in Las Vegas was so terrible, Hawaiian pizza is what I would get.
Yeah. I like my favorite pizza is white pizza, but the problem is white pizza is either great or it sucks.
Yes.
There's no middle ground. You can get away with almost any pepperoni and cheese. Any of that will be good. But white pizza has to have the right ingredients, and if it doesn't, it's not good.
If I have my say in a pizza, it is sweet sauce, char pepperoni, and onions, and then dip it in blue cheese.
The best pizza, the best white pizza in Western New York, I think, is Bocce Club. Bocce Club white pizza is good. They've got it down pat.
I like white pizzas. Tomatoes, lots of onion.
Well, you know, white pizzas matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know that?
Get in my belly.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay, here's what we're talking about today. We're talking about a go from the sublime to newsworthy event, and that would be the Bishops' Conference, which is done. I guess the bishop checked in over here yesterday with Bowerly and Bellavia, and that was good. I got some information there. But the day before, I thought was very interesting because here you have a conference of bishops who are trying to get to the bottom and turn this thing around regarding abuse. And the advisor to the Catholic bishops said that anybody that ignored abuse complaints in the past should quit, plain and simple. I have a report here from Jay Tokaz. Catholic bishops who ignored sexual abuse by clergy should resign. And that was from the chairman of the National Review Board established to advise bishops on sex abuse issues. Francesco C. Cesario told more than 250 bishops from around the country at a meeting, the clergy. They've put the meeting together to see if they can get this thing solved. They want to do more than hold accountable those who ignored sexual misconduct allegations. He also advised the bishops to create a national database, which sounds very logical to me. That would list all clergy who have been removed from ministry due to sexual abuse of minors. So that makes sense. It certainly does, the first part and the second part. While much of the guilt has been placed on priests, bishops have often escaped punishment, said the man I just described, Mr. Osorio. As more information is publicized regarding the inappropriate handling of abuse by bishops, it remains clear that some bishops have escaped the consequences of their acts of omission. There are sins of commission and there are sins of omission, and that's what he's talking about now. Actually, they could both be applied there. So I'm asking a couple of questions. Will the Catholic Church solve the abuse problem? And if so, when? Now, I heard the bishop on this tape report of the bishop on this morning because he talked yesterday in the afternoon here on WBEN. And I found little solace in when it came to him describing the problem. He said the Pope said not to take a vote on it, whatever. And several bishops have spoken out being disappointed as to why they couldn't move forward. And our bishop said that it was his guess. He said he didn't he couldn't claim to be inside the head of the Pope, but it was his thought, let's put it that way, that it's such a big problem. And then he started naming countries, and it's true in Brazil and here and there, and it didn't sound like a good discussion piece as to why it isn't moving forward because it's too big a problem. You know, we used to have a problem called too big to fail during the financial crisis. Catholic Church, I think, is too big to fail. But I don't think we get it better by saying, well, we couldn't do it because everybody's doing it right now. So will the Catholic Church solve the abuse problem and when? And should bishops who ignore the problem resign? 803-0930, 1-800-616-9236, and star 930. Will the Catholic Church solve the abuse problem, and when? Keep in mind, an advisor to the Conference of Bishops a couple of days ago said that any bishop who had previously ignored the problem should quit. He was quite explicit about that. Do you buy that, too? Should bishops who ignore the problem resign. Now, we have some Facebook right away with Mr. Beamer.
Yes, Sandy, we will start with David. The question, do you think that the do you think the church will solve its abuse problem? David said yes, but only if the Vatican listens to the American bishops. Right now, I don't see the Vatican knocking themselves out to solve the problem. Pope Francis seems to be dodging it.
Yeah, I'm not happy with the pace. It's like the pace of a snail. Give me another, if you would, please.
We will go with Amy, who says, pedophiles have been with us since the beginning of time. They won't go away, and they cannot be rehabilitated. The problem will always be with us, the church and otherwise.
See, they have a bit of a problem, and they have a shortage of priests right now. And the last thing they want to do is take priests off duty. I think it's something you have to do. If you're faced with it after an investigation, if you find the allegations are true, it's you have to do it. And you know what's funny is this is an organization that is not listening to itself. Think about what the Catholic Church and probably most churches preach. They preach right and wrong. They preach about your fellow man. Take care of your fellow man. They teach a lot of things that are in direct conflict with ignoring allegations of sexual abuse, especially with children. So if they're not in a position to stand by and follow what they preach, then why should you follow them? And I think that's the basic problem. Now, whether the Pope is energized and decides to get going and put this on the speed dial, I don't know. It doesn't seem like he wants to. And over the last couple of days, once the Vatican issued a don't vote suggestion, you tend to listen to those, several American bishops and several prominent Catholics have been quoted as being very unhappy with that. So, I mean, we've had times before where the American bishops and the American cardinals seem to have a little different view. Let's face it, it's one Catholic church, but it's a lot of different cultures. Think about it. The culture of South America as opposed to the culture here. Culture of Europe the far-flung reaches of the Catholic Church. You have different factions, different thoughts, and different ways of life. People mature in different parts of the world faster than in other parts of the world. Their attitudes on these sorts of situations may vary too. So it's not an easy question. It seems like it's an easy question, but it's not really. And to get uniformity, I think the church needs uniformity. It's one church. It's a world church, and they need to come up with the right formula. Let's go to James in West Seneca. James, you're on WBEN.
Oh, good morning, Sandy. I got to respectfully disagree with you, sir, on that point. I believe it is an easy fix, and uniformity is attainable, if you'll indulge me.
Sure, go ahead.
Here's how it needs to work. Now, I don't believe the church has proven they can police themselves. If there is an allegation of abuse, suspected abuse, or reported abuse, this isn't call the bishop, call the cardinal, call a priest, any of that. They need to adopt a policy of you take the report, you take the suspicion, immediately pick up the phone, and call the authorities. And until they're uniformly willing to do that and make that change and implement that as the policy, this will not change.
Well, remember, it's only recently that they, I think, grudgingly said that it's not just a sin, it's a crime. I think, believe it or not, something as simple as that goes a long way because it fits in what you just said. Instead of it being, something within the church, it's a crime. They don't have any more right to commit that crime than anybody else, and I think they're admitting that for the first time.
Well, yes, I did hear that. Now, what is admitted and what is put out there in the public to kind of quell the outcry and the anger of the public is one thing. But what is being said behind closed doors and what's been a years and years long culture of, kind of look the other way, sweep it under the rug.
Sure.
When the lawyers, that's another thing. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, it's and you and I know, and I think most of the listeners know, it's not only a church, it's a huge business. And there's always been questions about decisions made at the Vatican and little shadowy questions and whatever. And they're magnified by the fact that it's a church. And people have deep convictions, a lot of people who are members of the church. So it makes it even worse. But James, you're right. You brought up some good points, and I'm glad you called. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's think about it like this. If you had a product, and say the church is a product, you would not market nor, in some cases, manufacture the product the same way for each country, each area. You would customize it for that area. For instance, that product would look different in South America than it would look in Sweden, for instance, okay? I mean, that's just the way it is because of cultural differences. And this is no different. I think that I have no information right in front of me, but from what I've heard anecdotally and on TV and here, there, and everywhere, is the maturation process is different from area to area. So some areas might be more mature at a younger age. That doesn't make things any easier to solve. But to make it better, you've got to come up with a magic solution. But I think what he just said is something we recommended a couple of weeks ago. Call the police. That's one question that I didn't interview the bishop, but if I had, I would have respectfully asked, out of all of the people, let's see, I got the numbers here, by the way. Out of the people, for instance, dioceses across the country have received 302 allegations of child sex abuse that occurred in 2000 or later, according to the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate. There it is. That's down from the more than 5,932 reported offenses that were alleged to have taken place between 1960 and 1984. The Buffalo Diocese received 191 new complaints over the past year. Had I interviewed the bishop, Bowling and Bellevue did an excellent job. I did not hear it yesterday, but the first interview was very well done. My first question was, how many calls to the police were made for that 191 new complaints? Were there any calls made? Why not? If it was beyond being a sin, if it really was a crime, and it is, why were the police not involved? On News Radio 930, we're asking, will the Catholic Church solve the abuse problem, and if so, when? And should the bishops who ignored the problem resign? That's what their advisor says on News Radio 930 WBEN. We are back with the Beach and Company. I'm Sandy Beach. Just a reminder that on Monday at 9 o'clock, we will announce, as we open the show, we will announce the new trip. All we've said so far is that it's in May of next year, and it involves four modes of transportation, and it's Sandy Beach's hit list. It's things that I've wanted to do, but we were unable to take individual pieces and put it together because there's a lot to putting a tour like this together as far as availability of seating and things like that. And you got to make everything blend. But this time, Barbara Hughes from AAA has pulled it off. This is a magnificent trip, and I'm telling you, we're cutting the commercial for it today. And the premise on the commercial is there's too much in it for a commercial.
Let me guess, you guys are going to be driving Ferraris, right?
Now, Tony, you might spoil it.
Ooh.
Stop. I gave Tony, he begged me. It was so pathetic. I gave him one hint. It wasn't a hint. I actually told him one thing.
Yes.
And you thought that was pretty good. Yes.
Yeah, see, Tony got a legitimate hint. I got a hint, then I was told, no, that's not part of the trip.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. But Tony's hint is going to happen. What I told Tony.
Okay.
That is definitely, that's in cement. We're going to do it. Okay? And so that'll be Monday. However, on Sunday, we were going to just have a little get-together, a little party for all the people who have been on the various trips. We've had 8 of them all over the world, from Europe to Alaska to every place you've ever heard of, basically. And we were just going to have a get-together for that. And I said, you know, we're going to announce it Monday. Why don't we announce it at the party? And then the people at the party who have already been on trips would have the first shot at signing up or just getting the information to consider signing up. And so that's what we're going to do. And I'm telling you, this is such a trip. It's possible. It's not likely, but it's possible that it could be sold out before we even get it on the air.
It's amazing you mentioned the Alaska trip. I was just looking yesterday at the pictures. And I don't know if it was a restaurant that you guys pulled up to, but it had Bill's parking hole.
Oh, yeah, that was. We were told that there was a Buffalo Bills expatriate up there who had a restaurant, and that's exactly where the train stopped. Right there, there was a Buffalo Bills sign in Alaska.
Cool.
It was really cool. All right, we're asking, will the Catholic Church solve the abuse problem? And if so, when? Should bishops who ignored the problem resign? It's not my suggestion. It's the suggestion of an advisor, Francesco C. Cesario, from the National Review Board, established to advise the bishops. So he's the man in charge of that board, and he says that if you, as a bishop, did not act on reports of abuse, you should quit. Pretty strong, pretty committed. And we'll see if it happens. Let's go to Kathy in South Buffalo. Kathy, you're on WBEN.
Hi.
Hi.
You could have an answer to this problem. These incidents happen when there's a priest and a parishioner, whether it's a child or an adult. They're alone. This should never, ever happen. And I have a logical reason why.
Okay.
If you have a child that has to go and talk to a priest, there should be a parent or guardian or a nun or another priest. I would say not another priest because you never know. But a woman, a female, either a parent or a teacher, go into this building, wherever they are, and they be visible to this person, to the third person. And then they could have their little quiet talk, and they would be safe. And I'll tell you, this wouldn't happen if there was always another person. We had an incident at the church I went to, and the pastor was counseling a woman who had all these problems, and it wound up being horrible. And he came before the congregation and admitted what he had done, and he resigned.
Wow. How about this? Talking about what you just said, you know, having another person available all time might be problematic for the availability of people. But how about this? What if the area that you would meet and have these discussions and whatever were closed-circuit TV? What if there were cameras in there that could be monitored at any time? I don't think many people would take a chance on problematic behavior if they knew there was video surveillance.
These churches are filled with little nooks and crannies.
Well, that's true, yeah.
There's always the dreaded downstairs. I don't know what goes on down there. I remember as a kid going to a couple of different big Catholic churches, and they were scary to me.
Like, well, look at the confessional alone. You're in a darkened area with just a little cloth barrier between you and the priest, and you're in adjacent areas, confessional alone.
We need glass walls.
I think we need glass walls in the whole church, to be honest with you. And sometimes people get a little carried away. For instance, I have a text here. It says that all priests should be castrated. That's ridiculous. If you come to the church and say, I want to devote my life to God, I feel that way. I'm very strongly religious. It would be ridiculous to ask them to be castrated. My goodness.
Well, about one other thing is if they would allow, men all human beings have needs. And if they would allow priests to marry...
Now you're talking.
Problem.
Priests to marry would be a big step in the right direction, I'm thinking.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for all the information. We appreciate it. 803-0930, 1-800-616-9236, *930. We'll be back after this. And we're asking about the situation in the Catholic Church. Will they solve the abuse problem? If so, when? And should the bishop, any bishop who ignored the problems, just cast a blind eye or just moved a priest from one place to another, did not really deal with it, should quit? That's what their advisor said. And now I got a headline here. From Jay Tokaz in Buffalo News, church reports decline in sexual abuse. Well, that's good. I think one of the ways you could look at it is the first way to solve a problem, I was told a long time ago, is to admit you have a problem. Now, the church, because if you don't know you have a problem or you don't admit it's a problem, you're not going to solve it. Pretty simple, but pretty powerful when you think of what they've done to kind of pretend it didn't happen. If somebody was accused of some problem in this parish, instead of dealing with it and taking care of it and doing what's necessary to solve it, just move them to another parish. And then those people are going to be facing the same problem, and the church wasn't even decent enough in that case to give them a heads up. So you can see why people would be angry if you were in the place that the priest got moved to and you didn't know. I mean, when there's sex offenders moving into a neighborhood, the neighbors are notified by the government that that's happening. So at least they have a heads up.
We get a list.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there's any in your neighborhood, you'd want to know about it.
And especially since they're near the kid's school.
And those crimes are the highest form of recidivism. There are more repeat sex offenders than anything else. So that's what the government does. The church just moves them to a different location. That's called, kicking the can down the road. You're not dealing with it. You're giving it to somebody else to deal with. And why, I don't know. I would think that the only excuse, not that there is an excuse, would be because of a shortage of priests. But then you got to do the cost-benefit analysis. What is the benefit of having enough priests? Well, there's a lot of benefits, lots of benefits. You have more personal services are available. You have more recognition, more discussions between priests and the congregation. But what's the cost? The cost is if you knowingly move an alleged offender, shame on you, shame on you. And so that's why people are angry. You know, you may not feel you have a horse in this race if you don't have a child in school. However, I think this is a community and worldwide problem. And when I heard the bishop this morning on a tape piece from Bowerly and Bella Via yesterday, after this session was over, that he doesn't know why the Pope ordered no vote with this meeting. But he is guessing, and that's the best word he can use and I can use, he's guessing because this is such a worldwide problem, and he even explained the countries, said in Chile, in this country, so it's not just us, but that's not an answer. That's not an answer that it's not just us. Other people are doing it. Can you imagine if you did that in confessing your sins? Huh? Can you imagine kneeling down, confessing your sins, hoping to be absolved by the priest, and the priest gives you, whatever you have to do, you can say three Hail Marys and a good act of contrition or whatever, and you say, but Father, other people are doing this. That's not anything that would fly, would it? Why should it fly for them?
I saw, I don't know if you call it a political cartoon or whatever, and it has a guy... walking into the confession booth and the priest on the other side, and he says, "You first, Father."
I only have one confessional joke, and it's pretty funny. The man's confessing, he gets done, and the priest says, "You're not confessing, you're just bragging." That's why it's a it's a simple joke, but it is.
It's a good one.
It is funny, isn't it? Yeah. All right, let's go to who's been on longer? John in Lancaster. John, you're on WBEN.
I'm just wondering why, out of all this clergy stuff, why there hasn't been rolling public service announcements for children and, you know, minors, that if somebody touches you or tries to or anything, you're going to dial 911 immediately or tell your parent or teacher. It seems like all these accusations didn't go to the police immediately.
In fact, it's only recently that they describe it as not just a sin but a crime. Before that, you never heard any of those allegations being described as criminal conduct. And so I think that's a step forward. You know, maybe it took too long to get here, but at least now they're admitting it's a crime. And by attaching the word crime to it, which it certainly is, the question is, why were the police not notified? Instead of them doing the investigation, why aren't the police doing the investigation?
But parents have been telling us that, you know, if somebody tries to do anything inappropriate or all this stuff. Like, where are the parents in all this, of all these people that are accusing this? Like, why weren't they telling their kids, like, you got to call the police immediately or we will? Like, where was all the secrecy on the...
You know, a lot of that thing you're talking about was taught in school. And I think the schools feel very comfortable with any family questions. But I don't think the schools would be very comfortable if the allegations were against the church, especially one church. Because, the problem seems to be in the Catholic Church alone. Maybe it's in other denominations, but I certainly haven't heard of it.
Yeah, and I don't know why we were taught sex ed in school and we were told what was right and what was wrong. I mean...
Yeah, and that's what they do. This is their business. Right and wrong is the church business. And they apparently are good at discussing what's right and wrong for you, but not necessarily what's right and wrong for them. Good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. That is an excellent point. Tony, we've never brought that issue up. We have warnings all the time in PSAs, public service announcements, and more, and there's all kinds of discussions and whatever about inappropriate behavior. We've had it with physicians. We've certainly had it with other groups, with doctors, but not necessarily any commercials about it with clergy.
No, we haven't.
I wonder why. You think the people who would orchestrate that are a little nervous about that?
Maybe feel uneasy.
And why is it, besides the fact that the Catholic priests can't get married, why is it you don't hear about that problem? It may exist, but we don't hear much about it in other denominations besides the Catholics. You don't hear about Methodists doing it or, you know, Baptists doing this or that. Every once in a while you hear about an individual, but you don't hear it as systemic as in the Catholic Church.
I wondered the same thing. I've not done much reading on it, so I don't know.
All right. When we come back, we want to talk to you, 803-0930, 1-800-616-9236, and *930. Will the Catholic Church solve the abuse problem, and if so, when? And should bishops who ignored the problems resign? On News Radio 930, this is WBEN.